We individualize training in the pool, so why not individualize your nutrition? Erica Biney of Biney Wellness Building will help you and your swimmers get exactly what each athlete needs through genetic testing and personalized nutrition plans. So stop guessing what you should and shouldn't be putting into your body. Athletes within a few weeks have noticed they're recovering faster because they're fueling their body with what they need and staying away from what their body hates. Erica understands swimming. She gets it. She's worked with over 20 Olympians, including the fastest man in the world, Caleb Dressel. Group discounts are available, so go to Biney Wellness Building and get in touch with Erica today. That's Biney, B-E-I-N-E, wellnessbuilding.net.
Hey guys, I've been trialing some revolutionary new swim tech, and now you can get your hands on it too. This is EO Swim Better, a swimming evolution in the palm of your hands. Improve your technique with EO Swim Better.
Analyze your stroke technique with EO's Swim Better handset. Go to eolab.com, use code Brett at checkout and save 10%. Boom, here we go. Newly crowned European champion, Matt Richards. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, buddy. How are you?
I'm great. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. It's been a while. I've been following you for ages, but haven't yet had the chance to get to know you.
Well, something very familiar. I've been following you for ages too. So, well, at least while you've been kicking ass, that's awesome, mate. Killing it. I'll start with this. I went and watched Robbie Williams the other night, and he came out on stage. And first thing he said, it was like, and excuse the language here for anyone, you can block your ears, but he came out and he was like, I'm Robbie fucking Williams, you know, and that's kind of the persona I get from you when you walk out for a race. Like I get this idea that in your head you're thinking, I'm Matt fucking Richards. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd say that's about right. I'd say I'm very comfortable in my own skin. You know, I've always kind of been like, I don't really try and be anything that I'm not. You know, I'm very confident. I'm very confident in my ability in the pool. And yeah, you know, if that's how it comes across when I walk on poolside, then that's no problem to me.
Yeah, it's fantastic, man. I love it. I love it. Love the energy. Anyway, it's not like you're saying, it's the energy you're giving out. So let's just start with the championship you just came off. The European Championships out there and. In where are they?
Romania.
Yeah, I keep thinking Hungary for some reason. They're in Romania, of course. They're in hometown of David Popovich. So, in terms of the atmosphere, it looked electric out there.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was fantastic. It was really cool. It was a country I had not been to before, so it was another one to sort of tick off the map, which is pretty cool. But yeah, the atmosphere was amazing. The crowd were fantastic. There were so many sort of youngsters there to come and watch, which is really special to see that. You know, they were being inspired by what we were doing in the pool, which was quite cool for me to see that even in a different country, you know, what we're doing is inspiring the next generation. So yeah, it was quite special.
How do you feel about swimming short course right now? I mean, and as fast as you're swimming, and you know, does it take away from anything you do in long course by having a focus on short course right now?
No, not at all. I mean, so yes, we race short course, but the focus has all been long course. You know, so I think we didn't really work too hard on all the skills and the turns and all that sort of stuff going into it. But that was at the meet. The real focus was just on trying to execute all the little bits as well as we could, because obviously you don't get to do as many turns as you would long course. So it's quite a good chance to just practice some of the things you maybe wouldn't do as much on a day-to-day race, if that makes sense. The real focus is all long course this year. Obviously, you know, the Olympics being in the summer at the end of this season, that's the main priority. So we've just been working towards that.
Yeah. I'm going to go to full screen here in a minute when you answer a couple of questions. Don't get shocked by that either, by the way. I'll hit you with that for a second. But, mate, phenomenal kind of turnaround in your career. You started off as a remarkable junior and then had this great opportunity to go to Tokyo and be part of this gold medal winning relay. So maybe we can just start with that, for instance. Like, just tell us about Tokyo and just that experience as a youngster being on that relay.
Yeah, it was definitely a unique experience. I don't think many 18-year-olds get to go to an Olympic Games and be part of a relay with such depth that I got the opportunity to be a part of in Tokyo. You know, racing in a team with the current Olympic gold and silver medalists and another former world champion on the 200 freestyle. You don't get much more stacked than that as a first time sort of rookie on a team. So yeah, that was pretty incredible. I mean, there was a lot about that meet that maybe didn't go to plan. I was due to be racing the 100 free individual there as well. And due to all sorts of different reasons, but fundamentally because we wanted to focus on the relays, ended up not swimming that to focus on that 4x2. You know, but it was definitely a very eye-opening experience for me to see, you know, how the absolute elites operate, because that was my first time really at a major senior international. And going from, you know, the junior ranks to having COVID for a year where nothing happened, so then all of a sudden being rocketed into that was quite eye-opening, but also really inspiring. And just, you know, from that point onwards, I was like, I have to be on top of the podium at this level for the foreseeable.
Yeah, awesome, mate. Don't run over that, by the way. Like, I want to go back to what you just said there, because it was a little shocking, and you reminded me of something. But did they basically tell you that you couldn't swim the 100 freestyle because they wanted to focus on the relay as a nation?
It's a difficult one. I wouldn't say they told me I had to, but we definitely had a discussion around what was the best for the team at that meet. Given that, you know, the 4x100 on day one, we had a really solid opportunity as that team, and ended up not making it out of the heats. And so I think off the back of that, everyone was kind of just a little bit cautious and I don't want to say scared, but you know, people didn't want to take any risks in those heats and wanted to make sure that every relay opportunity we had, we really maximised. And so, you know, we had a discussion around it and, you know, we came to the conclusion that, you know, that year, was I going to podium on 100 freestyle? Probably not. You know, if you'd asked me at the time, I'd have told you, absolutely, I will. But, you know, looking back at it, I probably wouldn't have been able to get on the podium that year. I'd like to think I'd have finaled. But the priority there was really getting after that relay and giving the best performance that I could in that race. And, you know, looking back at it, I don't necessarily think that was the wrong decision.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to debate right or wrong, but it seems a shame to take an opportunity away from an 18-year-old kid to, like you said, be in a final at Olympic Games. I mean, Kyle Chalmers was 18 when he was given a chance to be in a final, and look what happened with that. You know, so you never know in a final. So it just seems to be kind of, you know, this, I don't know, mate. It's hard to be totally critical, because you come away with a gold medal. You got the end result in the end and had a phenomenal experience, but just seems like a shame. But anyway, it is what it is now. I think in that situation, let's say for next year in Paris, if there was a similar thing proposed to you, would you make the same decision again?
Absolutely not. No chance. I think that, you know, I've done that now. You know, I've put the relay first. I've put my, you know, individual aspirations at a meet like that to one side to help the team out. And I think going into next year, I've got some really big goals. There's a lot that I want to achieve in Paris. And, you know, I think from my perspective, I don't think that would be the right call for me now. But you know, I think we've got enough depth and enough strength in British swimming now where on those relays, we don't really need to worry about that as much. You know, and that's not to say we can get complacent, because we can't. You know, the rest of the world is stacked in those races. But, you know, making it out of the heats, for example, on those relays, we've got some phenomenal guys coming through on those 100 and 200 freestyles that will absolutely be able to get the job done in the morning to make sure that we can swim in the final with some guys rested. So I don't think we would have to make that decision again. But if we did, I think I'd definitely stand my ground and make a different decision this time.
Yeah, for sure. Good stuff, man. I love that. So you come off this phenomenal year as an 18-year-old, and then from all reports and all accounts, you have a god-awful year the following year at 19, just can't swim for the life of you. What happened the following year, mate?
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it, to be fair. I'd probably put it the same way myself, to be honest. Yeah, it was an interesting one. I think my coach for the 2021 season was Joel Fink, who's as an Aussie guy, he's a great bloke and a fantastic coach. And he coached me through to the Olympics from COVID through to the Olympics. Joel then moved back home to Australia. And so I changed coaches here in the UK and just did a different program. It was something that I hadn't done before. It was a type of training that I'd not necessarily done before. And, you know, so essentially the kind of work we were doing was very much in the sort of middle ground, the threshold-y kind of zone, which isn't really an area I've done any work in my training history. I've always been very much really high intensity or really low level aerobic stuff. And so, you know, it was one of those, it was like, let's give it a try and see if this works for me and see if it helps my swimming, if it works my physiology. And, you know, by the end of that season, we knew that maybe wasn't the right training method for me, but by the same token, we learned that. And that was something that, you know, I plan on being in the sport for a very, very long time. Yeah, I'm only 20 years old at the moment and plan on going well into my 30s. So to learn that sort of thing early and get that knowledge and get that understanding of my body and my physiology and what I need is very much a valuable lesson. So as much as I'd have liked to have swum really fast last year as well as this year, you know, looking back at it, there's definitely plenty of learnings to take forwards and sort of action into what I do every day nowadays.
So from what I gather, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're the type of guy that is, you know, likes to know what they're doing, likes to know why they're doing it. And the new coaching situation you have and the new training environment you have a very deep understanding of why you're doing things and how you're doing things. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. My coach, Ryan Livingstone, is the most knowledgeable coach I think I've ever had a chance to speak to about the science behind what we do and the physiology and the psychology and just everything that makes up a great swimmer or a great swim. And I think that really works for me. I love to know what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, how it's going to make a difference. And I find it quite difficult for me doing stuff without knowing the purpose and knowing the reason behind it. But if I do understand why and what it's for, I'll give you everything I've got. And I think that's why myself and Ryan work so well together, because his understanding means that I can pick his brains. I can ask him loads of questions. I can really truly get an understanding of what I'm doing and the deeper meaning behind it. And then I'm just able to give absolutely everything that my body's got, because I know that what I'm doing is pushing me in the right direction. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it, mate. Yeah. Very cool. And we're seeing that a lot more with the modern day athlete, you know, especially some of the ones that are taking more control of their training themselves. Is like they're moving away from just being told what to do and having this relationship with their coach of an understanding of like, why am I actually doing this and how am I doing it, which is really there's a high IQ now amongst the swimmers, which is really nice. You know, I like that. Tell me this too. You're the only swimmer in history to go flat start under 22 in the 50, under 48 in the 100, and then is it under 145? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Mate, that's an incredible range. How are you able to have that type of top end speed, but also that endurance to kill a 200 the way you're doing it?
Yeah, I think fundamentally, I'm very much a fast twitch athlete. I'm very naturally twitchy. I've got quite a twitchy sort of typology, and my fibers in my muscles are just make it very easy for me to go fast. And it's always been that way. I've always been quite springy. I can jump really well. I've always just been very explosive. So in terms of that, for the 50 side of things, that's always just come really easily and really naturally to me. I was always good at the 50s when I was younger. And my sort of training that I do and that I have done for the last however many years, kind of we've sort of worked me up to that 200. So we kind of pushed to try and get me to that 200 level where I've got the fitness and the endurance to be able to sustain a really high level of speed for, you know, a minute and 40 something seconds. And so in doing that, I think we've got quite a unique situation where I've got the physiology to naturally go really fast on the 50, and then trained really well to create the endurance for the 200, and therefore you merge the two together and you get a really good 100 as well. So I love all three races. I love all of them. I think as I get older, I'll probably move further down that spectrum, more towards the 100 and eventually more towards the 50. But for now, I think while I'm still quite young and still a bit of a whippersnapper, I can, you know, push it out and smash out those 200. So I think it's a yeah, it's definitely, it wouldn't necessarily work for everyone, but for me, it works really well.
Yeah. Part of my revolution that I'm going on right now, the idea behind a sprint revolution is basically, you know, training to race ultimately and doing what is necessary for a particular event. And like I said, you're just one of these guys that has a spectrum. So in terms of the training itself, how are you able to put it into a week or put it into a block of work? Is there a time and a place where you focus more on the 200 and less on the speed, or is it a combination every single week where you're working all three ranges?
Yeah, it's very much a combination. I think we have quite a complex model that we work off for my training, where we'll never really have a block where we won't do any of a certain type of work, if that makes sense. So in every block throughout a season, we will always have some speed work in there, some race pace work in there, some aerobic in there, some maximal aerobic stuff in there. So it's a mixture of everything all year round. And we just kind of turn up different sections depending on where we are in the cycle and what we want to get out of it. So, for example, right now, off the back of the European champs, we'll now go into quite a heavy aerobic and speed focus block. So the next block, I'll do a lot of really long aerobic meters where it's just, 3K aerobic, just perfect technique, really low level, sort of 5 out of 10 intensity. And just trying to work on ingraining those perfect technique skills and getting everything right at a really low level that's not hard. It's not anything sort of physiologically challenging, but the reason why we'll do that is because working at that really low level where you're sort of 130, 140 beats per minute as your heart rate allows the walls of your heart to expand. And therefore, as you go into the higher reps and the higher intensity stuff, your heart can then pump more blood out of your heart and around your body with each pump. So that's kind of why we do that. And at the same time as doing that, we work the really, really high intensity stuff, the absolute maximal speed stuff, where we'll be doing, maybe 3-4 times a week, we'll have 16 efforts of speed off 4 minutes, where we'll do a 25 max or a 20 meter max and then swim it off to 100, do that off for 4 minutes and just really, really high intensity stuff. And again, it's all about focusing on the perfect technique, getting the skills right, the starts, the underwater, the breakout, and then the actual stroke on the surface at that absolute maximal rate. So that point in time now, we'll do a lot of that, but then we'll also still have a little bit of race pace in there. So we might do a session or two a week where we'll have, a 100 pace session here or a 200 pace session there. And then we'll still have, what we call maximal aerobic speed, which is what I do. Some of the other guys do a different kind, which is more towards the thresholdy sort of stuff, but I don't do that, as I said, it doesn't work for me. So that might be, for example, what could that be? That could be 30 100s off 2 minutes, where we'll go four of them at maximal aerobic speed, which long course for me would be about 55, 56. And then we'll do one easy and repeat through that 6 times. And so we have quite a complex model, and that's what I was saying, where Ryan, my coach, is his understanding of the sport is so in depth that what I do is completely different to what my training partners might do. So what I do and Emily, my fiance, what she would do is completely different. We never do the same sessions. We're always, we're in the pool at the same time, but never training together, if that makes sense. Where, myself and James Guy, for example, where we'll train, we might have a few sessions a week where we'll do a similar sort of thing, but the rest of the sessions could be completely different. And it's all just very individual and based off of what we need. So yeah, that's kind of how a general block or week would look for me. I love it. I mean, I could talk about it all day, as you can probably tell, but.
Oh, that's good. Cause I'm here all day. Let's talk. No, I don't want to, it's an Olympic year, and I'm very respectful too of people's training. I'm very fascinated with it because everybody's doing something slightly different, like you said, and everybody's got something that works for them. There are a lot of similarities with what a lot of people are doing. So there's no real secrets out there. It's just what's the formula for Matt Richards that works for him. And you're telling us, some of the things that you like to add and keep out. But it is an Olympic year, and I don't want to certainly, dive into everything that you're doing. I want to keep that ambiguity. I want to keep it a bit of a secret in terms of how you do some certain things, but just generally, overview type stuff. I'm very fascinated with it. So, one of the other things I'm interested in too is, like, A lot of people go to train with people that are better than them. You know, they move to train with an Olympic champion. You moved out of training with an Olympic champion, with Tom Dean. So you were training with Tom and then moved away from him. And now you two are battling as you know, fastest man in the world right now. How's that been for you in terms of the relationship of training with him and then going away and now kind of going head to head?
Yeah, it's I think all of us guys that are part of that relay in Britain would all say we're friends and teammates before anything, and then we're competitors. So I think, you know, when I left Bath to move down here, both Dino and Jimmy Guy, both of them completely understood the reason for me wanting to move and me wanting to sort of focus on really what makes me a great swimmer and really focus on that and work those things to get the best out of myself. Like you say, a lot of people would go to somewhere to train with somebody that's better than them and try and sort of chase, if that makes sense. But I think I've always been extremely competitive in everything I do. I'm just a very competitive person. And so I found in that sort of environment, I'd end up trying to chase all the time and trying to be faster all the time. And what that led to was me doing, you know, working too hard at certain times, you know, and trying too hard in different areas that maybe in an aerobic set where I can just chill, I would rather than just chilling and sitting in the right zone, I'd end up chasing and trying to keep up with Dino, who's, you know, an aerobic demon. So that for me, I found taking myself out of that, going somewhere where I could really focus on me and exactly what I need, was really valuable.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Do you find you just said you're super competitive, and I'd heard that about you too, not only just in the pool, but like outside, and that competitive can make people around you a bit uncomfortable at times because you're just so competitive, right? Like, and Phelps is anyone that knows him was very similar in that sense too. So like some of the top athletes in history have had that competitiveness and they it's hard to turn off for them in other places, but do you find you're two different people in a way? Like you're just Matt Richards, the guy that's sitting here and chilled and relaxed. And then when you're put in a competitive situation, you become something a little bit different?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say so. I think I'm anytime there's a competitive situation where, you know, whether that be a board game at Christmas or an Olympic final, I'm always a very competitive person. I'd like to say that when things don't go my way or I were to lose a race, I'd like to say I'm still sort of gracious in defeat. But I always want to win fundamentally. That's my aim and my goal is just to make sure that I win, whatever it might be. So I think, you know, does that maybe mean that when I'm in those situations, I'm not the same sort of chilled, laid back kind of person that I might be normally? Yeah, probably. But do I think that kind of makes me, you know, the athlete that I am? Yeah, I think so. I think without it, I maybe wouldn't be doing the things I'm doing or have done the things I've done or go on to do the things that I hope to do. So I think, you know, it's something that I'm, you know, I'm very unapologetic for the fact that I'm as competitive as I am. But I think it's definitely something that, you know, has a real edge for me.
How have you handled the talk amongst, you know, media outlets and people like me and people from the outside looking in, and we're talking about Tom Dean, how great he is because he's an Olympic champion. We're talking about David Popovich, how young he is. He's a world record holder. And, you know, you got these superstars, and then all of a sudden there's this guy named Matt Richards back here, and he's like, hey, look at me, I'm just as good. How have you handled kind of putting yourself in that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to sound quite blunt, but to be honest, I don't really care what people say about me, you know, whether that be that they're saying I'm great or saying I'm awful. You know, I'm not really fussed. I like to win. And if I win and people say I'm great, well, happy days, that's nice. But if I win or if I lose and people say I'm not great, then, well, I'm like, well, I don't really care if you think I'm not great. I'm just annoyed I didn't win, you know, so I'm going to chase it and try and go again. And so, you know, in that respect, you know, it's great to see people getting recognition they deserve, and I would never do anything but celebrate that, you know, and celebrate the success of the other guys out there, because there's some incredible performances going on around the world in the last few years, especially in my events.
So I'd
like to just say I celebrate that, and if people start talking about me in the same way, well, you know, great, that's lovely.
Are you thinking about a breakthrough in the 100 where you get under 47? Are you thinking a 46 swim is kind of on the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, at the World Champs, obviously, I went 47.4 in the final and the semi-final, and 47.5 in the heat. So I think that drop is a natural progression now. I think last season I went from a 48.2 down to a 47.4. That's not to say I'm going to drop another 0.8 this season. If I do, that's great, but that's not necessarily what I'm saying here. It's just that I think the natural progression now is to try and see how close we can get to that sub 47 mark and try and really chase after that and get after it. I think a lot of the performances I had at Worlds on those hundreds, technically and tactically, maybe weren't quite right. I said this the other day, I think on the 100 at the moment, I seem to keep making little mistakes in the races that cost me at the end of the race. And every time I fix the one from last time, and then a new one crops up, and I'm having to try and fix that the next time. So it's frustrating me that the 100 seems to not be quite going the way I want it to at the moment. Don't get me wrong, I'm still improving and I'm getting better on it, but I seem to be not getting the touch on that, whereas I am on the two. So I'm trying to chase it and trying to see, you know, the little areas we can improve on, whether we technically, tactically, or skills wise. You know, there's lots of things we can continue to improve with. And I think, yeah, at the end of the season, if we could get under that 47 barrier, obviously I'd be over the moon.
Could you talk me through your race plan in the 200? Like, you obviously go in with, this is how I think I can swim at best. Is there any point during the race where it's dictated that you have to change your strategy, or are you just sticking to the strategy and whoever gets their hand on the wall first wins it? Like, what's your strategy here?
Yeah, so I think we're quite flexible with how we swim any of my races, really. I think, coming back to the fact I've got quite a big range across those three events means that we're in a unique position with the 200, for example, where we've got a lot of speed that we can choose to use wherever we want in that race. And likewise, on the 100, we've got the speed that we need to go out really quick, but we've also got the 200 background so that if we choose to back end it, we can do that too. So it really depends on the race, the situation, who's either side of me, what needs to be done in that race, whether it's a heat or a semi and we just need to make it through, or whether it's a final and we need to win it. It really depends. But I think every race we'll go in with a game plan. We'll have an idea of what we'd like the race to look like and how we think it will look like from the wider race perspective and what we think the other guys in the race will probably do and base it off of that. But fundamentally, when we get into the race, if something is different from what we maybe expected and we need to make adjustments, I think I'm more than happy to make those adjustments in the race. And that's one of the things I love about the sport, is how tactical it can be, especially on the 200, where you can dive in with plan A, and by the time you get onto the 450, you're on plan D. You know, it's all completely changed, and everything's kind of gone haywire. But that's kind of what I love about it, and the fact that there are so many different ways it can be swum. Everybody's going to swim it differently, and fundamentally we're all trying to achieve the same goal.
I like that. I like the fact that you're flexible. Talk to me about this World Championship that you won, you know, a couple of months ago. Kind of surprising, I guess. Like, I think everybody again thought Popovich was the favorite for this thing, and the way he kind of set it up in the heats and semis looked like he was kind of holding something back. And then all of a sudden, you know, you have this massive swim. We had your dad on the podcast, which was awesome, straight after it too. He's a great guy. But I don't know. It kind of shocked the world a little bit in a sense. So how did you manage that race?
Yeah, I think going into it, as always, the plan was to win it. I absolutely respected every single one of the guys that was in that race, but I didn't fear any of them. There was nobody in that race that I went to afraid of or sort of scared to take it to. But at the same time,
what do you mean? Stop for a second. What do you mean by that? Like, You hadn't won a world title before. You're not the world record holder. You probably weren't the fastest person on paper, but you're telling me you're not scared of anybody and you think you can win. What gives you the idea that you think you can win this? And I'm with you on this. I'm just trying to get in your head, you know?
Yeah, I think I've always been one to set massive goals. So ever since I was a little kid, I've always set huge, huge goals and aspirations. And then I figure out a plan and I work back from the goal to work out exactly what needs to be done, when it needs to be done by, and how I'm going to do each little bit along that journey. Mm. So I've always had that sort of mindset of this is the goal. It may sound ridiculous to everybody else, but I'm going to do everything that I possibly can to achieve it. Right to the point where after my first ever swimming gala when I was 8 years old, on the bus on the way back with the team, one of the teammates that was on that team back then, who's a family friend of mine, she still remembers it and told us after Tokyo, 8 years old on that bus on the way back, I told everybody that I was going to be an Olympic champion one day. And, you know, she still says, she's like, it just sounded ridiculous. And all of us were like, what is this kid talking about? You know, and then 10 years later, you know, I was stood on top of the podium in Tokyo. So I've always been very much a big goal setter. And I think because of that, and because I've got that plan and I work back and I try and execute every step along the way, if I know that I've done all the steps along the way in that journey, by the time it comes down to racing, I'm in my head, I've already done it. In my head, I'm like stood behind the blocks and I'm like, I've already won this race. I just need to go in and do it now. And so I think it's definitely a very, it probably comes down to, again, me being very confident in myself. You know, I always have been. I'd like to think I always will be. And so, yeah, maybe it may sound ridiculous at times, but that's just kind of how I operate.
Former swimmers looking for a way to give back to the sport in New York City? Reach out to Imagine Swimming. Since 2002, they've been the premier learn to swim school with international and American staff, including Olympic champions Anthony Irvin and Eric Vint. Imagine Swimming offers infant to adult classes, plus competitive team options, water polo, and an artistic swimming club coached by an Olympic silver medalist. With flagship locations across Manhattan and Brooklyn, Imagine is always looking for the next generation of swimmers to pass on their knowledge and passion for swimming.
Tired of settling for less than the best with your team's dryland program? Swimstrong Dryland is the answer you've been looking for. With world-class dryland programming for every age group, customized to fit your team's needs, nutritional coaching and education centered on the latest evidence-based research, leadership training and character development to promote an athlete-driven culture, sports psychology education and mental skills training, coaches' corners to promote collaboration, data-driven performance analysis, and an unrivaled family of athletes, coaches, and teams, fast swimming starts here.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, even you talking about this and just the way you seem relaxed. You know, a couple of years into my coaching career, only 2 years in, I had an athlete that I took to the Olympics, Cesar Cielo. He ends up winning the gold medal. And this was after 2 years of just being in coaching. So I wouldn't say I was an expert and really put in the time and the yards, but it happened, right? Like I become this Olympic champion coach and everything after that seemed kind of like inconsequential, like, okay, well, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, we still got this Olympic gold. And I get a sense from you of like, you know, winning this Olympic gold at 18, you've almost got like, the burden's been taken off you. You're like, you're an Olympic gold medalist for the rest of your life. Now it's just like, you're having fun. You're going out there and you're just competing, you're racing, as opposed to maybe a Popovich who seems to have the weight of the world on his shoulders because he's not an Olympic champion. And he's just, I don't know, from the outside looking in, he's not smiling as much as I'd want him to, whereas you just seem to be loose and free and able to compete, which gives you an edge, I think. Am I right?
Yeah, probably. I think I love what I do. Fundamentally, I think that's what it really comes down to for me. I just love swimming. You know, if you know, many people would probably tell you I'm very much a swimming sort of nerd. I'm a massive geek about swimming. I love it. You know, I love the racing. I love the training. I love the science behind it. I love watching races back. You know, I just love the sport. And I think when it comes down to it, when I stand on the blocks and I'm diving in for a race, no matter how high pressure it is or no matter how much is riding on it, fundamentally, I'm just enjoying what I'm doing. And I think that kind of allows me to just be, like you say, just be loose and just relaxed and enjoying it, because, you know, I'm just in my happy place. You know, it might sound a little bit cringy, but it is for me, when I'm in the water and I'm racing or training or whatever it may be, I'm just happy. And I think, you know, like you say, being able to be an Olympic champion at 18 probably helps that, and probably also helps with that confidence piece of, you know, being able to stand behind the blocks and go, you know, I am an Olympic champion. I deserve to be here, you know. But I think from my perspective right now, I couldn't care less about what I've done in the past. You know, the fact that I won Olympic gold in Tokyo was fantastic, but that isn't going to help me win one next year. And it's definitely not going to make me win multiple ones next year on individuals as well. So, you know, I kind of try to put that behind me now and just keep moving forwards and keep learning, keep enjoying it and just get after it and see what I can do.
Yeah. Well, what was it like in Romania, where this crowd was just electric? David obviously comes out, they introduce him. You know, you've got to crush some souls here. You got to take the whole crowd and you know, turn them against you in a way. So what's that like, you know, kind of standing behind the blocks right before the whistle goes off and knowing that, like, this is my race. Like, I appreciate what's going on here, but I came here to win.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was one of those that I've got so much respect for David. The things that he's done over the last few years are just unheard of. You know, going 46.8 at 18 was
17,
it?
Yeah.
17, there you go. So, yeah, we got there in the end. You know, going 46.8 and I'm 42 in at that sort of age is just ridiculous. And, you know, I was at the meet, I was at Europeans watching him do that. And I didn't race any individuals at that meet because we'd just done Worlds and Commonwealths and gone to Europeans. So I just did a load of relays. But I remember being in the stands and seeing him swim that world record and just thinking, that's ridiculous. You know, a 17-year-old lad doing that is just absurd. So I've got so much respect for him. And I think in many ways he must have a very similar mindset to me in that, you know, not many 17-year-olds are going to stand on the block and get in knowing that they can break a world record. Do you know what I mean? And so he must have so much confidence in himself. And I think, you know, going into Romania and racing in front of his crowd was a real privilege, you know, being able to race alongside him and have a fantastic race. It was a real ding dong, a proper dust up right down to the wire. And so, you know, again, I just loved it. I loved the race. You know, obviously it's probably a shame for the crowd that David didn't come out on top, but you know, it's one of those, it's just sport. And, you know, I said it straight after the 200 and I was actually, unfortunately I was spot on. I said in an interview afterwards, you know, tonight I can be on top, tomorrow night it could be completely different and good as gold. The next night he touched me out by 2 100s on the 100. So it's just one of those, you know, I don't think me and David are done with our head-to-heads. I think we're going to have a hell of a lot of them over the next however long, you know. And I think in terms of being able to race in front of that crowd, I think it was probably just really special for that crowd to see David race. And on that last night, to see him get on the podium on that 100 free. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love it, mate. Yeah, I love the battles. I mean, I think I put out a tweet where I was like, you know, he's a winner and he's a winner. He's a killer. He's a killer. He's a winner. Like the 100 and the 200 right now seems so stacked. I mean, just any one of you guys can win it on any particular night. And that's not taking away you and your competitiveness. I think you could probably dominate all of them if you wanted to. But at the same time, there's probably five other guys that could win too. So it's like, it just seems like one of those ready rooms where sometimes when you walk into a ready room, you think to yourself, all right, I got him beat. He'll be tough and he'll be tough. It seems like walking into the 200 or the 100 free at Olympics next year is going to be like, dude, any one of these eight guys could win this thing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that comes back down to the same, as I said earlier, about just respecting the guys that you're racing. Because like you say, especially on that 100, 200 free at the moment, there is just so much depth. You know, have we seen faster swimming on those events in the past? Well, the 200, yeah, we've had guys go 42s, we've had guys go 43s. You know, at Worlds, we didn't have any 42s or 43s. But have we seen the depth that we've got right now where we've got countless guys going 44s on the 2-3? We've got God knows how many guys going 47s on the 100 free. You know, it's a level of depth that I don't think has been seen for a long time on these events. And it definitely means, as you say, when you walk into that call room, you know, you're looking at all those guys and you're like, well, I need to build my A game tonight, because if I'm not making a perfect swim here, I'm not going to win this. And that's just, it's just the way of the sport at the moment. It's the nature of those races. And I think that makes it that little bit more exciting for me, because I'm like, you know, there's it has to be a perfect swim. Every time you get in that race in those finals, you have to put together the perfect swim, because if you mess up on multiple things, you are absolutely not going to win it, no matter who you are, because somebody else will have the perfect swim, you know? And so I think that that's what makes it so exciting and so enjoyable, is that, you know, there is absolutely no guarantee of who's going to win what. You know, for the Olympics next year, there's no guarantee I will even get the 200 free or the 100 free individuals, because I've got to beat a load of guys in Britain first who are also ridiculously deep in that event. So, you know, that I love the journey, and I think that's the most important thing, is just trying to enjoy each step and each phase of what we're doing, and just, you know, be in the moment.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Are you, I guess you're forced to go all in for the trials, right? Like, you're going to have to, you got the best guys in the world to race to, for those top two positions. So you're going to have to go all in for the trials, aren't you?
Yeah, 100%. I think every year for the British trials, pretty much everybody will be fully rested and fully tapered and fully shaved for that meet, because there are very few people in Britain on very few events that can afford to go there anything but fully prepared. You know, maybe PT at the height of his dominance, you know, he could probably go there unrested or unshaved and still get the job done. But the rest of us, you know, it's anybody's game, and you've got to get in there. You've got to be on your A game every night and make sure that you get those swims. So that's the real priority right now, is getting the swims. And then once that's done, then we can really plan for the summer.
How come you're comfortable talking about this stuff? I get the sense right now, and maybe it's just the confidence you have. And again, you're just exuding, and I can feel it just the way you're talking. Like, you're very, very confident. I like that. But like, just going public like this, why are you able to do this, you think? Like, a lot of swimmers are very closed off right now and don't want to say anything.
Yeah, I think the sport's in an interesting place right now. I think that there's lots of change that's come in the sport over the last few years, with things like the ISL, with the massive restructure of everything with COVID. You know, with events kind of just being thrown in at random times in random years, and people racing all over the place. So I think that the sport's in a weird place. And I think that's probably why a lot of people are, you know, a little bit hesitant to speak about a lot of the things going on in the sport. But from my perspective, I think, you know, I think the only way that we can make progress with what we're doing in the sport is by talking. And I think in Britain, especially, swimming is really kind of going under the radar at the moment, which is a shame, because in Tokyo we had our best Olympic Games ever as a swimming team. I think we were the highest medal winning sport out of all the British sports at the Olympics. And then our World Championships wasn't even on the TV for us back here. So, you know, I think trying to raise the profile of the sport, especially in Britain, is definitely a priority of mine. And I think that's only going to come by talking and banging the drum.
Yeah. You guys are in a situation where you have to go to Doha to qualify for the relay for the Olympics. Is that correct or not?
Yeah. So, as a team, we have to qualify that spot. I mean, I don't think we've announced who is going exactly yet, but, as a country, we need to get that spot qualified in Doha to be able to swim the 4x1 in Paris.
So what does that mean? You got to go and actually get an A-cut, and do you have to do that in the final as well?
I believe it just has to be done at Doha. So I think it has to be top 16 in either Worlds just gone or Doha, or podium in Fukuoka or Doha. So, you know, it has to be a very solid team that's taken there. It can't, you know, we can't afford to risk anything. But yeah, I believe the team will probably be announced any day now.
Have you guys, as a group of swimmers, talked amongst yourselves about going there and racing?
Yeah, definitely. I think we've had a couple of, sort of meetings as a team and as a relay team, where we've all kind of sat down and gone, right, what's needed to be done? What went wrong at Worlds just gone? How did that happen? How can we make sure it doesn't happen again? And what do we need to do now? You know, from Doha to Champs to Paris, you know, what do we need to do to get the best possible result we can out of that meet? And I think we're in a good place as a team.
Are you comfortable with putting your hand up to say I'll swim the morning? Are you good with that?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I think, you know, especially in Doha, it's like we can't afford to take any risks. We need to make sure we get that team qualified. And I think if that means all of us go there and we swim our best team in the heats and then our best team again in the final to make sure that we get that spot, well, so be it. You know, it's just one of those things we've got to do. And I said it at Worlds, we lose as a team and we win as a team. And I think at Worlds, it hurt us to be disqualified in that. We were really confident. We were really excited. So it hurt us to be DQ'd in that and to not get to show what we could really do in that final. But moving forwards now, we're one unit and we want to try and get the best out of each other.
If you're selected, which you are, so let's not be stupid. are you going to swim a full program in Doha, or are you just going there to swim a relay?
I would probably swim the 4x1 on day one, and then I think that I would probably not swim the 200 in Doha, and I would just swim the 100 and maybe a 4x2 towards the end of the week. And reason being for that is because in Doha, if I were to be there, I would probably not be going there fully rested. I'd be going there with a sort of a semi-rest, but trying to get the best out of myself at that meet as possible without compromising our prep into champs. So in that case, doing the 200, it's going to be a really tough one for me. I've always found that in-season swimming for the 200s, I struggle. I don't have that gear to go to that I have when I'm on taper. Whereas the 100 in season, I can still throw down some pretty solid swims. So the real priority there is going to be, well, let's have a go at the 100 without doing the 200 three times the day, the 2 days before. And just try and get those 100s right, because the 200 is starting to click. Things are starting to fall into place and it's starting to move in the direction we want it to go. Like I said earlier, that 100 is still fighting back a little bit at the moment. So we want to try and give that a shot and see if we can get all those little things right with a sort of protecting myself a little bit beforehand.
I understand and makes sense. It'll be a little bit weird though, right? Like to have the defending world champion sitting in the stands watching it, you know, and then someone winning it and then calling themselves a world champion, but you're actually in the stand kind of just sitting there cheering them on, which is strange. So I don't know, like it's just a weird world championship, isn't it? Like if you, let's just say you go ahead and you win the 100 free, are you going to feel like the world champion, you know, the fastest man in the 100, or is it just like a swim for you?
Yeah, I think I don't want to say too much, because at the end of the day, whoever does go to that meet and win whatever event it is, that's some achievement, and that's something that can never be taken away from any of them. And anybody that wins that will be a world champion and forever will be. For me personally, that meet is all about the processes. It's all about the skills. It's all about what can we learn from that meet to move forwards, because the priority this year is all about Paris. If it weren't for the 4x100, I know for a fact I would not have been going to Doha. And so from that perspective, I'm kind of like, you know, someone else will win the 200 because I'm not going to do it. So someone else will take that sort of title, if you like, and become the reigning world champ. And good luck to them. You know, that's absolutely fine by me. But when it comes to the summer, we're going to have to race again in Paris. And that's going to be where we fight out to be the Olympic champion, which is, to me, the real priority.
Oh, it was the 4x1 that got DQ'd at the World Champs, was it?
Yeah, exactly. Okay,
4x1. Yeah, sorry, I mixed that up earlier. Do you guys feel, well, you're going to Doha to qualify the team, which is great, but do you feel like you have a team that can actually contend in Paris for the gold medal? Like, is it that good, the team, you think?
I think so. I think so. I mean, look, in Japan, in that heat, we swam a time that would have got silver in the final and would have been 0.3 off gold. And that was in the morning when we still had somebody to bring in. So you look at it like that and you go, well, we've got a really good team. We've got a phenomenal group of guys on that event where we can put together a hell of a swim. Does that mean that we should be going into Paris overconfident? Absolutely not, because we've never medaled on the 4x1 Britain at a world meet, a world or Olympic level meet. We have never, ever won a medal. So we can't go in there with our head held high and be like, yeah, we're the big I am, because we're not. We've never won a medal, let alone win it. However, should we be going in there being absolutely quietly confident in our ability as a team? Yeah, 100%. You know, we've got 4, 5, 6 guys that are rapid and getting faster and faster. So I think, you know, from my perspective, I know that I will always go into a race wanting to win it. And that's no different on a relay.
Yeah, it was good to see Jimmy Guy getting back on the podium again, mate. And just how emotional he was about that. You know, he's a great guy, isn't he? And I think he's good for Great Britain. He's good for swimming, and he's just passionate too. But that emotion coming out, I think, is good for swimmers to see too. Like, it's okay to be emotional like that. It was just a really cool moment, I thought.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it was so special to see and be a part of that with Jim. You know, Jim trains with me now down here. We train together every day. He's a very good friend. And so to be able to see that for him, see him get back on the podium and how much it meant to him is really special. You know, and I think it's a sign of things to come. And I think he's just going to keep building and keep improving. You know, the stuff he's doing in the pool is phenomenal. I can't wait to see, you know, what he and I can do for the rest of the season.
Yeah. This has been fascinating, mate. I really enjoyed this conversation. I could talk to you for hours. You're really in tune with what you're doing and what's going on in the world. I love it. Maybe we can talk again after you qualify that relay after Doha. Actually, you know what? I'm going to be in Doha. I'll be there. So maybe we can do a little one-on-one together, you know?
Yeah, perfect. Sounds good. Let's do it.
I love it. All right, good luck over the next few months, mate. Have a Merry Christmas, and you and your family, and congrats on all the success this year, mate.
Thank you very much. Yeah, you too. Have a good Christmas.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Bye-bye.